Hi, my lovely listener, this is Véronique, your host. So before I introduce you to the next guest, I want to make a little announcement. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now, and I have a new path in my life, and this is fantastic. I love it, and I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath, or if you want to know about sound bath, I do virtual sound bath because I know a lot of you are listening from abroad. So we can do Zoom, we can do YouTube. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and inner peace, offer virtual one-on-one sound healing sessions and online group sound bath designed to help you release stress and restore balance, and using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guided meditation, each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. So if you're ready to shift your energy and raise your vibration, visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to High Vibes and a Mic. I'm your host, Véronique. Today, I speak with David. David Amelin has authored several influential books on SEO, including Google Semantic Search. His work emphasizes the importance of context, relevance, and semantic connections in digital content strategies. Beyond SEO, Amelin's writings often delve into broader topics like decision-making, neuroscience, and the implications of artificial intelligence. Books like The Sniper Mind investigate the mental frameworks that lead to success in high-pressure environments. A passionate martial artist, he is a certified Taekwondo instructor, holds a second-degree black belt in ITF Taekwondo, a black belt in WTF Taekwondo, and has had intermediate training in Kung Fu and Muay Thai. When he's not writing, he's training. Let's hear it from David. Hi, David. How are you today?
I'm splendid. I'm really glad to be here, and I'm just sort of thrilled to see where this conversation is going to go.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, people love talking about spirituality, fitness, being happy, getting better, you know, doing something better for your life, or to be the best, you know, living your best life, like they say those days. These days, oh, yeah, I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation. So for people who don't know you, you wrote a lot of books, right?
Yeah, I've written about, this is my 19th book.
19th? Okay, I wasn't even, because I look at your library and, okay, I didn't even realize 19th. All right. And so the one we're going to talk today is, or at least we're going to reference, is Build to Last.
Yes.
And so you said on your website that you it aligns with your focus on holistic wellness and personal transformation, which I love. I love to, you know, do anything to transform myself for the better. And so you have a background in neuroscience and martial arts. So that's good. So let's talk about that. So how did you start writing all those books? Because the books I saw that you started with were more about marketing and Google. So
yeah,
please
explain. It's a funny trajectory, right? Absolutely. I've written, my background is in chemical engineering. My master's is in quantum mechanics in laminar flow processes, which is a particular way of addressing molecular bonds at a macroscopic level.
Okay.
And I sort of took the mathematics from that background and worked in search for a while. I wrote the first book on semantic search. And then I've written books on branding and marketing and social media and decision-making, which is where the neuroscience comes in, and intentionality. And now the latest one, which is Build to Last, it's about fitness and wellness. And all those books seem very, very different. But essentially, the binding thread in all this is us. It's people. It's behavior. And what fascinates me, what I usually go and dig deep for, is the way we behave in every different sort of domain or every different interface. You know, I'm fascinated by the fact that while we intellectually know what to do, we don't do it. While intellectually we know what we should be doing, we do the opposite. And I sort of ask myself, you know, ask those questions. Why does this happen? And then I sort of go digging for answers. And that's where all these different books cover different subjects, but essentially it's human behavior in those different domains. And fitness is no different.
Okay, yeah. I mean, when you said about that, I looked one of your videos on your website and there was this lady saying, you know, how to just start working out every day. Just don't think about it. Just don't say, okay, should I do it? Or I do have time to just go and do it. It's part of your routine. And don't say, and don't tell yourself you have to do it, just like you are, like you get to do it. You're happy. You know, you're very lucky that you can exercise, actually. Because a lot of people cannot, right? And that, that would be part of your lifestyle. So yeah, I think sometimes we know what we're supposed to do, and we do the opposite. So what's going on up there? Why are we doing this?
Well, what an excellent question to start with. We are very ancient beings inside our head, and we live in a very modern world. And the world we came from 10,000 years ago was a world that was adversarial to us. We had to live a life where every day we would have to walk long distances, we'd have to run for some part of the day, we'd have to dig for our food, we'd have to climb trees, lift rocks, cut branches, cut up a way through a forest. And that was life. You know, all the things which we consider exercise today, that energetic expenditure, was our everyday life. And when we didn't have to do those things, what did we do? Zero, absolutely nothing. Because we are hardwired to conserve energy, which is how we survive in that environment. That mechanism is still active today. You know, you and I, you know, spend most of the day looking at the screen. The refrigerator is about 15 steps away with about 10,000 calories in it. And we don't think, when it comes to, you know, working out, we still are reticent to do it. There's this voice in our head that says, you know, you had a hard day, it's tiring. Maybe you should put it off, you know, do it tomorrow, start next week. Whatever excuse we come up with, it sounds very plausible, sounds very logical, because our brain is really good at giving those excuses. But they're just that, they're excuses. And the voice that tells us don't do it, that reticence we feel, is that ancient mechanism trying to help us survive in that environment in which we don't exist anymore. And it doesn't know it. And we tend to listen to it because we're programmed to listen to it. People who didn't in that past didn't make it, didn't pass on their genes. So we all have that mechanism in our head and we listen to it. So that's why we don't exercise.
Okay. And so when you wrote Built to Last, what made you, because you wrote other book before, I was reading on Intentional. That's another book.
Intentional, that's right. Yeah. Right? Which is about living the life we want to live. It's tangential, but also related, because intentional is how we end up living the life we want to live.
Okay.
Which, again, very few people actually achieve that, but all of us want to achieve it. So, you know, it sort of follows the same kind of internal logic, if you like, and I sort of peel back a lot of layers to understand why we don't and what we should be doing.
Okay. And so in Built to Last, you take the same... like things from Intentional, and you add more like fitness advice in there for people to be better?
I'm very glad you asked that now. Now, this is not your average book on fitness. There are about 200,000 books out there on fitness, and they all tell you to do something, and I tell you to do nothing. What I help you do, it's not prescriptive at all. It's not prescriptive by design. We are all different. We have different physical needs. We have different psychological needs. We carry a different past, each of us, different experiences, different memories, different knowledge, different traumas, all those things which make us unique. So if I was to be prescriptive and you were to accept my prescription, sure enough, you would do it for a while. And then you would find really good reasons not to do it and you would drop it. And this is exactly what happens. You know, we pick up some kind of exercise fad, and we drop it. We pick up an exercise, we pick up a diet, we drop it. We, every year, January, gyms are full. By the middle of February, they're half full. By the middle of March, only 30% of the people who started are still there. And by the end of April, it's about 15% of them. So 85% of the people drop off. And it's not for lack of motivation. It's not for lack of willpower. It's not for lack of knowledge. It's not for lack of understanding or even the means to do all these things, because clearly every year we spend about $1 trillion on fitness globally. So the reason we don't do those things is because of that. We listen to the voice in our head. We feel it's a stressor. We don't understand why we feel that way. We can't fight it against our own. We fight against our own nature. And then as life becomes complicated, this precious pile of we drop it and we stop, and then we don't do what's good for us. And there are ways to address that, which is what the book actually helps you do. It helps you understand your own operating system, and then it actually helps you find the answers for yourself. And those answers always have to come from within, inside us. If we don't understand ourselves, what fitness means for us, and it has to be a personal meaning. It can't be, you know, the kind of ready-made image we get from films or popular culture or the fitness industry. That's coming from the external world. Really, we kind of like it, but it doesn't mean a lot to us. It has to be a personal meaning. What do you want fitness to be for you? Do you want to get up in the morning and feel great? Do you want to feel as you age that your body is your own? Do you want to run around with your grandkids and feel amazing while you do it? Do you want to progress in life and not have serious illness, sort of curtail your sense of freedom, your sense of fun, your sense of joy in the world? The synthesis of all those things is unique to each person. And the book helps you identify that. And the moment we identify that, then we have that emotional connection to the future we're trying to achieve through exercise. And this is what happens in our head then. When we understand, when we make that emotional connection, our brain recalibrates the cost of the stressor, which is exercise, against the benefit of the outcome, which is personal to us. And because we understand it and want it emotionally, then it has meaning for us. And because it has meaning, we prioritize it. And then we become really good at sticking to our exercise routine, whatever that routine is. It has to be something which we can actually do, which is easy, doesn't kill us, doesn't every time, you know, become so difficult that we can't function, and allows us to feel great in our body. So that's what the book actually does. You know, from chapter to chapter, we learn different things. And then there are tools included in terms of how you should address some of the things which you feel, how should go approach some of the difficulties which you have, so you can actually find solutions for yourself. So it becomes a blueprint, essentially. It's going to be unique for each person.
Makes me think about what I talk about with this other guest, like root cause, like root cause of emotions. And when you find the root, you know, of all your emotions, you can understand better what kind of decision you want to take in your life. So maybe something like this.
Absolutely. Every decision we make has an emotional root. It's an emotional basis. And then we are very good at inventing or supplying the logic that justifies it. So we have to be very good at understanding those root causes. And the difficult thing for all of us is to look inside ourselves. That's really hard, because we have to face sometimes things we don't like. We have to deal with things which are painful, emotionally painful for us. And that's really difficult. We tend to shy away from those things. But if we do it, then the benefit is we become stronger inside. If we become stronger inside, then that's when you start to get stronger on the outside as well.
The first step for someone who feels really stuck and they don't know what to do. So they're going to pick up your book, but what's the first step, you know, they can take toward living a more meaningful and aligned life?
Great. That's a really good way to approach this now, to start. Now, first of all, the book itself is fairly complete. I include 84 field-tested workouts in there. They are customizable to every different level of fitness. They have different lengths. I mean, some of them are just a couple of minutes long. And we know from science that if you exercise for a couple of minutes, the neurochemical changes in the bloodstream are the same as if you exercise for an hour. So if you just take 2 minutes a day and exercise for those 2 minutes, and you exercise every day for the entire year, are you going to be physically different? No, it's going to be marginal. But are you going to be healthier? Yeah, all your biomarkers, all your basic functions, your blood pressure, heartbeat, cholesterol levels, all those things, cortisol levels are going to move towards a baseline, which will make a healthier you. Because essentially those neurochemicals in the bloodstream change our hormonal profile, which then affects all our major organs, which over the course of a year have an impact that moves us towards a healthier us. But to get back to your question, how do you start if you don't know what to do? And there are a lot of people there, right, who don't know what to do. I always advise people to start with whatever's easiest for you to do. Do you like walking? Yeah, do that. Do you like, you know, going cycling? Do that. Do you want to, you know, worst case scenario, get a stationary bike? Do 5 minutes a day watching TV. Absolutely, do that. Do whatever is easiest, because exercise is a stressor. We tend to avoid it. Life itself is full of stressors, which we can't avoid. So if we're trying to force ourselves to exercise, which is where we usually go wrong, and then we have all the other things to deal with, bills, crisis, relationships, work things, then it becomes really, really difficult. And then we tend to sacrifice the one thing which we feel we can do without for now, which is exercise. And really, we shouldn't, because that's a basis that gives us the internal and external strength to deal with everything else. So I always say, do whatever is easiest. Do it for however long you can. So if you can give it 5 minutes a day, fantastic, I'll take that. If you can give it 2 minutes a day, it's not a problem. If you can exercise for half an hour every day, that'd be brilliant. So that's how you start.
When you mean exercise, you mean something very like strength, because I like to do yoga, but some people say yoga is just stretching. It's not really exercising. So if you only do yoga, do you exercise?
Absolutely. Any kind of movement of the body.
Movement.
Exercises the body. And certainly yoga, you know, I mean, it depends what kind of yoga you do. And yoga has so many, such a big, broad spectrum. I've got a friend of mine who actually is a yogi and he teaches Ashtanga yoga. It is incredibly difficult. Yeah. It takes tremendous strength. So, you know, it just depends what you want to do. Certainly, within exercise, as we develop, we have different needs. And we can't keep doing the same thing all the time because our body adapts. And then it doesn't actually help us. So the body is an amazing adaptive machine. It will adapt to whatever external pressure you give it, which is how exercise helps us become better. But let's say you do something relatively hard. Let's say you go for 5 kilometers a day of the week, every week of the year. So in the beginning, you know, this is very positive. It helps you. It gets you tired, gets you hot and everything. We do this for a year. By the end of the year, that run doesn't give you as many good things as it did when you started. You need to do something else. You need to change. Why? Because your body now has adapted. You're not burning a lot of energy. You're not making a lot of adaptations. It's not pushing you hard enough. It doesn't mean that it's not good for you. But if you want to have a sort of cost-benefit kind of analysis where you're going to invest your time, you're going to say, I'm going to run for half an hour. Or I'm going to invest 30 or 40 minutes of my time. And I want to get a maximum amount of benefit for that, then you need to have some kind of variation.
So maybe if you want to exercise 5 days a week, can you do something different every day? That would be good, like for the whole year. You do something like every day, you do something different.
Yeah, if you can do that, that's brilliant. And again, I mean, we talk about exercise today, but you know, to go back to my initial example, the exercise we do today is a substitute for the lifestyle of the past, which we no longer have. And in that past, because we know this from there are a few tribes across the world that still are hunter-gatherer tribes, and they're isolated from civilization. And anthropologists sometimes spend 3 to 6 months embedded in those tribes. So that's the closest thing we have to the Paleolithic age, where we see how they lived in the Stone Age. So we know from those reports, from those anthropologists, that those tribes people have a very varied day. No day is exactly the same. They're doing different things. Some days they're, you know, carrying water and it's heavy. Other days they're digging for roots and, you know, different kind of activity. Sometimes they have to travel long distances to somewhere else. So it's a kind of aerobic exercise that they're getting that day. So it's not the same thing day after day. They don't do that. And we shouldn't either.
Do you know, I mean, could you explain why people just self-sabotage themselves? You know, they have like, they're trying to align themselves, but they have this misalignment between, you know, what the world we're living and there's, of course, the other circumstances in your life. And it can lead to confusion or self-sabotage. I don't know how to explain this sometimes, because sometimes we know what to do, right? And we're like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, you explained it beautifully. Okay, let's unpack it, right? Because you said self-sabotage and it sounds okay. I mean, we know it happens. That's why we have a term for it. We can't understand why it happens. And this is why it happens. There is a confluence of three different kinds of mechanisms, at least three, okay? So let's look at the first one. The first one is that negative voice in our head where every time we're going to face a stressor, that voice essentially tries to hold us back. In the particular case when we said exercise, it tells us not to do it. But, you know, it's the same thing. If I ask you tomorrow, you know, at short notice, can you give a speech in front of, I don't know, 50 people? You think, oh, wow, no. You know, the voice in your head is absolutely terrifying. And this is for everybody. It doesn't matter. I mean, I exercise all my life and I still have a voice in my head that says, oh, you're going to exercise now. It's been a long day. You're stressed. Why don't you put it off? And I have worked out a sort of a trick, which I will explain later how to get around it. But so this is one mechanism. The second mechanism in our head is a mechanism that essentially is trying to, it's called the risk aversion. and it's trying to hold us back. So if we go back to 10,000 years ago, the two guys who came out of the caves, and one of them said, you know, it's a beautiful day. Why don't we go over those hills and see what's on the other side? And the guy next to him said, you know, are you crazy? There's no support mechanism. We don't know if we're going to get any food or water. There may be wild beasts or other tribes, people in between. I might want to kill us and eat us. Why don't we stay here? And, you know, the guy who wanted to go over the hill didn't listen to him and went over the hill and never came back and never passed on his genes. So a lot of us now have this risk-averse mechanism that says, you know, anytime we want to do something, it tells, oh, you're not good enough. You shouldn't be doing this. It's too dangerous. You know, it's too tricky. It focuses on all the negative things, all the negative self-talk we are fantastic at giving to ourselves. So that's the second mechanism. And the third mechanism is that in order for us to be able to shut down or diminish those two voices in our head, we have to have a clear understanding of who we are and why we do the things we do. And that's our identity. Our identity has two parts. It has a part which is ascribed. It's what the world tells us we are, how we should act, how we should be thinking about things, what kind of values we should hold, what kind of behaviors are acceptable. And then there's the avowed part of our identity. That's the bit we create for ourselves. And usually those two things fight against each other. So unless they align, which is, you know, where the self-sabotage comes in, unless they align within us, so it's, you know, the things which you want to do are the things which best reflect who you are inside. They best make you feel better about your behavior, your identity, your values, your purpose in the world. Unless that alignment exists, then that friction inside us now conflates with the other two negative mechanisms and everything becomes really hard. So the easiest thing for us is to not do the things we do, not prepare adequately, not think we're good enough, not make every possible effort to succeed at what we're doing. And then that becomes a sort of like self-fulfilling prophecy, because it's like, okay, I knew it wouldn't work. I knew I was reaching too far. I knew it wasn't good enough. And it's never the case. It's always we allowed ourselves to believe those things in our head because, you know, they were there to protect us in the ancient past. We live in a world full of potential, full of information, full of opportunities, full of things which can help us grow and become better than we are. And we need to believe that we can do those things and take advantage of them. And to get back to my trick on how I exercise, I make a deal with myself. I say to myself, okay, if I don't feel like exercising, I'm going to, and I have a home gym now since the pandemic. So I tell myself, okay, I'm going to go there and I'm going to work out for 10 minutes. And if, you know, on the clock, if at the end of those 10 minutes, I haven't changed my mood, that's it. I'm going to stop, grab a shower, go to bed. And what happens usually within the 8-10 minute window is that my body temperature rises, my heartbeat is a little bit faster, neurochemicals in my bloodstream change. And we know from neuroscience that the moment muscles begin to warm up and exercise, they secrete a particular hormone that activates the reward system in the brain. My dopamine levels rise, serotonin floods my system. So now I'm more motivated to continue doing what I'm doing, and I actually feel good about it. And serotonin essentially makes me feel good. But the most important thing is it actually dampens down the sense of stress that comes from the exercise. So I don't notice it so much, and I tend to do it, and it works every time.
So you treat yourself knowing that you're tricking yourself, and it works.
Yes. Yeah, every time. And not only that, but I share this with all my friends. So now they all do the same thing. They go, when we start training for 10 minutes, yeah, we are willing to just stop on the 10-minute mark. And it never happens. They end up training for an hour. So it actually works.
10 minutes can go fast, right?
Personally, it's very, very quick.
The two exercises I keep doing because it gives me pleasure right away, do yoga and biking. That really give me, I think I need to do something very, for a long time and kind of hard, or I will just give up. I mean, I don't really like to go to the gym anymore because if I go to the gym, I need somebody behind me yelling, do this. I need the personal trainer, a coach, because I don't know, I'm not going to go like the further I can go with all the weight and stuff like that. I need a personal trainer and I don't have one. So that's why I just continue to do just biking and yoga. That's the only thing. And walking. Walking is good also.
Brilliant. For me. Yeah, you see, you've worked out for yourself the strategy that helps keep your body healthy and your mind also healthy because they're connected. And that's brilliant. That's exactly what we should all be doing. You know, you start working out for yourself. What is it that's going to work for me? What is it that I can do? A lot of the times we focus on the things we don't have. We focus on, oh, I don't have a gym near me. Or if I do have a gym near me, well, in winter, it's difficult. It's raining outside. You know, you've got to fight the traffic. You've got to find parking. You've got to fight the weather. And it's really, really difficult. Well, that's the wrong focus. We basically need to say to ourselves, what can I do with the things I have? And that's what you've done. You created a nice routine for yourself that actually works every time. And I think that's something we can all learn from.
Yeah. And I like in that book that you said that you created a fitness plan that can adapt to your life. But, you know, something that you have to, that your life has to go around, you know, training. Or I have a friend, she loves to exercise. And sometimes she tells me, oh, I don't even have time to do anything during the day because I have to go walk or I have to do like 3 hours. And like, this is too much. I mean, you have like, I don't know how many kids and a husband and other stuff to do. Why do you take all this time to exercise? You need to calm down. But she's obsessed, you know, with being fit. When it becomes an obsession, I don't think that's good either, right? Shouldn't be obsessed to be like that.
Absolutely not. And I had another discussion about a month ago with another podcaster who is in the fitness industry. We're discussing exactly the same thing. And we're discussing how, you know, people drop out in the gym after, you know, January, February, March, April, and you only get some people in the gym. And he said, you know, you get about 20% of people who are in a gym and they're actually addicted to the process, not to the outcome. And I said, you know, this is not a very good thing to do because it's an addiction. And any kind of addiction initially kind of feels okay because it's new and you feel you can control it and you get benefits from it because it's a coping mechanism for something else. But over time, it takes over and then you can't function without it. So this is not a very good way to be. Exercise is just another tool. We use it knowingly in a smart way to maintain the health of our body. We need the healthy body because it maintains the health of our mind and of our brain. And if we have a healthy brain, then we have a healthy mind because, you know, the process of the brain become the mind, so our moods, psychology, everything else become more integrated into what we do. They reflect us better. We tend to regulate our emotions better. We tend to process signals from the external world better and understand what's happening around us and then what's happening inside us. So these are the things which we build up gradually, step by step, by not allowing something else to control us. We need to be in control.
I can tell you, I signed up for the gym in January. Not signed up. I started, I mean, I took like 3 days, like 3 days for free, never went.
At least, well, you know,
I'm honest with myself. I'm like, I'm not going to go. And now they keep sending me all those emails. I'm like, oh my God. I'm not
statistics,
gonna go.
You know, it's perfectly fine because, you know, that kind of, you know, it reflects exactly what we know from the statistics. You know, we start out in January when, you know, we've been through Christmas. We kind of have relaxed a little bit. The stress of the year has gone. We feel pretty good about ourselves. And we feel well enough in terms of the energy we have to actually plan something ambitious for our future, which will help us grow and develop, right? Nothing wrong with all that. Except, right? The thing we reach for most of the time is actually difficult. You know, we think, okay, we're going to go to the gym. And for most people, this is what it means, right? And myself included. You have to get home from work, put your gym bag together if it's not there, get into the car, negotiate the traffic, never mind what the weather is doing outside, get to the other end, find parking spot, never easy, go to the gym, get undressed, get dressed in your gym, and then you have to exercise, right?
I'm already tired.
Well, exactly. I mean, just listing all these things, right, is exhausting.
Yes.
So I totally get it, yeah. So you can see how we set ourselves up for failure in that way. And this is the self-sabotage, right? Exactly. This is where you basically don't give yourself every opportunity to succeed. That's what self-sabotaging is. So we are setting ourselves up to fail. And then we'll say, oh, you know, it's too difficult. It's too hard. I can't do it. Maybe I'll pick it up next month, month after. That means next year now, right?
Yes. And actually, like you know, your friends, like you said, when you do it after you feel so good, you're like, I'm so happy I did it, right? I'm so happy I went to the gym or I exercised even 10 minutes or 15 minutes at home. It's so good.
Yeah. But that's why it's important. That's why it's important to actually set it up, right? And you know, since we're at it, I will say a couple of things which a lot of your audience and a lot of the people I talk to are not aware of. You know, we talk about motivation, we talk about willpower, we talk about discipline. And the moment we use those words is also the implied judgment that somebody hasn't got willpower, they're not disciplined enough. And it's all nonsense, right? This is what motivation is from a neuroscience. Motivation from a neuroscientific point of view is the willingness to do something which will take you from a place where you don't feel good about where you're at to a place where you're going to be better. You know, motivation in any context is exactly that. And it's reflected by changes in the neurochemical state of our brain, which accumulates specific neurotransmitters, which create kind of electrical charges, which lead to a discharge in our brain, which leads us to action. So if you're hungry and you're saying, I'm going to hold off. Well, at some point, the discomfort you feel in your head is sufficient for those neurotransmitters to basically create that electrochemical discharge. And you're going to say, I'm going to go and grab something to eat. Same thing if you're thirsty. Same thing when you exercise, right? In order for that to create a kind of motivation, you need to create the emotional connection that takes you from place A, where you don't feel so good about something, to place B, where you're going to feel better. And in that context, willpower is process and discipline is structure. So willpower is what? If you have a process for doing this, that's what allows you to do it. And if you have a structure around it which helps you maintain it, that's your discipline. That's all it is. It's planning. So we tend to think of, you know, these concepts and saying, I haven't got the willpower. No, you haven't got the process because nobody helped you design it or you didn't know you had to do that. You don't have the structure which allows you to do those things again and again and again. That's your discipline. Again, because you don't know that you had to do it or nobody helps you or you haven't got any help. Some people are struggling on their own and life is indeed difficult. And it's difficult to have that structure. So yeah.
You say it like that, it sounds so easy.
Well, it's easy to say and analyze and you think, okay, great. It's difficult to actually put in place, but it's not impossible. And certainly it's only difficult to put in place if it comes from outside yourself and somebody imposes it upon you and you think, this is too difficult. No. Work it out for yourself. Work out, you know, what can you do? You do this. How are you going to do it every time? Well, this is your process. I'm going to finish this, finish that, get to it, and do it. And what is the structure around it? Well, you know, for me, I have a hard cutoff. At the end of the day, I stop working at 7 p.m. That's it. It doesn't matter what happens, emails, crisis, whatever. It's going to have to wait because potentially I can keep on going until midnight. The work is endless. So,
I mean, can you talk to my husband, please? Because this guy, it's 9 p.m. No, but you know, yeah.
Well, it's an easy trap to fall into.
Yeah.
I'm one of the worst offenders from the past. You know, every solution I have come up with is because I made those mistakes and I learned from them. I thought, okay, you know, this has to go. And certainly since the pandemic, you know, I used to travel a lot around the world talking to C-suite leaders from Fortune 500 companies. And it was a chaotic life. You know, I had to sort of work things. And for me, because training is important, I had to work out things I can do on the road. But certainly, I was not sleeping enough because, you know, something has to give. So I was getting between 4 and 5 hours sleep every day, which is nowhere near enough. And my nutrition was not on point. Although, you know, outside, externally, I looked fit and healthy. Inside, I was not. My anxiety levels were pretty high. My stress levels were pretty high. So I had to rework a lot of things to sort of reevaluate how I was going to do them. And that's when I started creating these rules. So I said, you know, 7 p.m., that's it. Anything coming after that, it'll have to wait.
Even 7 p.m. is kind of late. So yeah, I mean, it's a good rule. So because we're talking about, you know, decision making and things like that, I also saw that you have this, I thought that was fascinating, that book about snipers, the sniper
mind. That's right, yes. The sniper mind, absolutely. Everybody talks about that one.
My God. So like we can apply that to all poor civilians' life?
We definitely can, definitely.
Yeah. So you think that there's some mental trait that sets snipers apart, of course, not the elite, and that we civilians, we can apply these in our daily lives? So
yes. And then that's the point. Yeah, I'm going to tell you about it now since we started.
Yep. Please, like one or two, I don't know, what can we do?
That book came about, it took me 3.5 years to write it. I actually interviewed 100 snipers. I got 302 interview hours with them. And I spent 10,000 hours going through studies to actually write that. Yeah, it was crazy. So snipers are and not just snipers, but any kind of elite combatant have to work within very, very strict kind of boundaries, which define their role of operation, and they still have to get the outcome they want. But snipers in particular, and the reason I chose snipers is because at the time, we had just invented, it was 2015, 2016, all these new studies came out. We had just invented portable MRI machines, where basically you stick electrodes in your head and you have a portable device. And that allows us to see the thinking brain in action as they make critical decisions under pressure. And that actually made it possible to see how their brains put thoughts together as they went about what they did. And this is what comes out of this, you know, the superpower of snipers, okay? Superpower of any elite combatant. Essentially, they're really, really good at emotional regulation. And this is not tamping down on your emotions. They're as human as any of us. They feel uncertainty. They feel fear. Feel have insecurities. They feel doubt. And they get tired. And the moment we get tired, all those things bubble up inside us, right? And we feel broken. We feel inadequate. We feel like we just want to curl up. And this is what they do. They are very good at that. Listening to themselves, their internal world. They are very good at kind of seeing the trigger points and the flash points where they feel low. They acknowledge and embrace those emotions. And because they acknowledge and embrace them, they don't rule them. And this is what we find. We find that if you have a problem, any kind of problem, you know, being a sniper in a battlefield, most of the time, they have, you know, extreme conditions. They are alone, they're usually tired, they're under fire, have to make life and death decisions. They're operating at the limit of their physical capabilities. And 9 times out of 10, they're operating beyond the mechanical capabilities of their equipment. And they still have to make everything work. So if you allow your emotions in that environment to take you over, this is the problem you have in front of you, which you need to solve, and you have been trained to solve it. But your brain now feels those emotions, feels the anxiety rising, thinks there's a threat, and it shuts down the critical parts of the analytical parts of the brain, which are necessary for critical thinking. So you don't have access to those resources because they're energetically expensive. And the body thinks there's a threat. I need to prepare you to fight or flight. So all the resources go into the muscles and they can't think. So they train themselves to emotionally regulate. They acknowledge all those insecurities, all those emotions, but they also say, okay, I'm capable of doing this. I'm not going to let them take over my response system. They practice deep breathing. And we know now that if you take rhythmic deep breaths, you activate the parasympathetic system of the body, which essentially brings us back down to baseline levels in terms of our heartbeat and our cortisol levels and our anxiety and the stress we feel inside ourselves. So now we're a little bit more balanced. And this is what happens. We look at the facts in front of us. Because the higher centers of the brain can function, we come up with solutions which were not evident before. And we can all do that. We don't have to be trained as snipers. If we face a difficulty in our life, if we panic, we see no way out. And what do we focus on? The panic inside us, the fact that we're alone, nobody can understand us, nobody can feel how we feel, nobody really knows us, we don't have anybody to turn to, and we feel trapped and helpless and small, and there's no way out. But if we could take half a step back, take a deep breath, bring a heartbeat down, look at what we have in front of us, think, you know, what can I possibly do to help myself in this situation? There's always something we can do. So that's the key takeaway from all that. And we can all learn from that.
What you mentioned earlier about breathing, is that like breath work?
Yes, because absolutely. Exactly.
I'm learning that right now.
Yoga, you do it in yoga, right? Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yoga, you do it, okay. Yeah. But I'm learning, like I told you, I'm learning to be a sound healer, and there's a lot of breath work in there. Once I did a session, it was like for half an hour. When we were done, I'm going to take a nap. I was It was weird. It was really weird the way I felt after, because I never did, you know, that kind of breath work. It's really work. It's like a job.
Absolutely.
And okay, I understand. So not like totally control your emotion, but just trying to make sense of them and knowing that, okay, you're not alone. Don't panic. And I can totally see that, you know, as a sniper, like, okay, I need to calm down. I don't want to get shot right now. So that will help, you know, to help to keep your mind like calm, right?
There's a lot of the book obviously covers a lot of other aspects which we can learn from, and some of those have taken into the framework from, you know, the military mindset into business and how we can apply them. But the fundamentals are that essentially the things which we think we cannot control then end up controlling us, and we lose complete control of everything. But if we regain control of ourselves by bringing down our physiological responses to stress, then our brain is really, really smart. And then it is usually capable of drawing on the resources we have, our memories, our experience, our knowledge, to actually help us formulate some kind of plan that will help us out of whatever situation we're in.
So that can help, you know, improve your decision-making. So like you said, in business, like, I think business,
exactly. And at the end of the day, exactly. Yeah, a lot of people tend to be reactive instead of active, which means that instead, you know, they allow the panic inside them to rise, so they don't control anything, so they just react or overreact to things. And that has a whole lot of other problems. Whereas if we are calmer, then we make better decisions. And ultimately, a life well lived, a life which becomes successful, is that. It's a succession of small good decisions made one after the other, which take you to where you want to go.
It's my goal in life to be more calm and make better decisions, because I notice people around me are like my husband. Like, I'm crazy, he's very calm. So we complete each other good. And I notice, you know, people who take like very quiet decision or take their time, yeah, the outcome is so much better than, you know, reacting right away. That's always good. I mean, we can talk about that for hours, but I think I'm out of time. So do you want to add anything else? Maybe I didn't ask about, you know, your new book or more advice you can give to people.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to add two things. The first one is for everybody listening and watching this, you know, life is hard anyway. It's hard regardless, and it's hard for everybody. And getting fit, getting healthy is also hard, also difficult. It's a stressor. So everything which you can do to make that aspect easier is going to give you a better chance in life, because you're starting out from a better base. You're fitter, you're healthier, you're smarter because you have all these resources, you're more capable. So whatever problem you're facing is going to become a little bit easier to solve. So keep that in mind. For those of you looking for Built to Last, it's on Amazon. It's on pretty much every online bookshop. You can order it from bookshop.org and get it into your local bookshop in your community. If you do that, it helps support local bookshops. I'm very, very into that. So, you know, think about it, because you're helping your community. And if you want to find me, I'm at davidamoland.com. And if you Google me, all my socials come up.
Do you do like personal appointment? No, are you a speaker? You just go and you do.
These days I don't travel so much these days for my mental health, because it's a lot easier. So I do a lot of remote stuff. But I do, because I keep it, you know, I sort of keep abreast of technology and keep abreast of science. A lot of stuff is coming out all the time. I get really excited by that, and every insight that I sort of get from those studies, I usually either tweet about it, or I'll put something up on Instagram, or I'll put something up on LinkedIn. So I actually share those things because they excite me. And also I hope that whoever comes across them will help them a little bit. And if we all get helped a little bit, I think it's a better world. And I live in that world. So I'm also, and I also want it to be good.
I need to check your book about, you know, the algorithm, because I need my, I need my website to be number one on Google too. So you have a book on that, so I'm going to check it out, and people should too. So I'm going to put all your information in the show notes, of course. You know, they
Thank
want
you.
To
Thank you.
Check you out, and this way they can learn a bit more about fitness and or marketing or whatever, you know, they need to do right now. Can we
Thank
listen
you
to
so
your
much.
Book also, or just can just read it on Amazon? Can they listen to it? It's on Audible?
Yeah, most of my books are on Audible. Okay. Build to Last is not on Audible just yet. It's coming out at the end of this month. So end of May, it's going to be on Audible. And we're going to announce it everywhere. So yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Well, thank you, David. And good luck, you know,
for the future.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hi, my lovely listener. This is Véronique, your host. So before I introduce you to the next guest, I want to make a little announcement. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now and I have a new path in my life. And this is fantastic. I love it. And I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath, or if you want to know about sound bath, I do virtual sound bath because I know a lot of you are listening from abroad. So we can do Zoom, we can do YouTube. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and inner peace of virtual one-on-one sound healing sessions and online group sound bath designed to help you release stress and restore balance, and using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guided meditation, each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. So if you're ready to shift your energy and raise your vibration, visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today.